We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the DFS pregame show here on Roto Grinders. I'm Jordan Cooper, aka Blender Ed, Blender HD, if you want to follow me on Twitter. And it's Tuesday, March 7th. And we're getting ready for MLB season, right? We got the NBA. We still got NBA going on. We got stuff going on. I'm here answering your strategy questions as always. So get them in. Email them in at questions@theoryofdfs.com about anything. But anything you want. But remember, this is unstructured learning. So if you have a question about projections, leverage, correlation, combinatorics, payout structures, and it could be, hey, prop betting or the daily fantasy pick'em contests, right? Like Prize Picks or Underdog, anything, expected value, and anything that helps you be a more profitable or hopefully a winning daily fantasy sports player in any regard. So give me those thummy thumbs in the chat. You know how much I love the thummy thumbs. Hit the thumbs up button, smash the like button, the subscribe button, the notification bell. We got, of course, What Doesn't Suki Sing here early as usual. Everyone else. Devin's here. Steve's off this week. So you can say hi to Devin in the chat if you want. He's rarely here. So what do we got on the docket today? I got a question, and I get this question every so often. I'm surprised I don't get it more often, but it happened. I get it more on Twitter, actually, on DM Twitter, but not necessarily emailed in, about lineup trains. You sometimes see this on Reddit as well, about when people use lineup trains in GPPs, and there's a difference between GPPs and double ups. So we'll get into that. But here's the question. This is from Jeremy Robbins. Right? Email your questions in, questions@theoryofdfs.com. Is there a reason that many players use a lineup train in 20 max contests? Okay, he says, if my strategy is to win, I think I obviously have a better chance of hitting first place lineup if I build 20 different lineups. Okay, that makes logical sense, right? Because you build one lineup 20 times, it's like, well, I got one shot of winning first place, but I'm going to win first, second, third, fourth, fifth, all the way down to 20th. But I've seen quite a number of players who play a 20 lineup train of the same lineup, which when it hits is quite profitable and super tilting when they move ahead of you by a fraction and knock you down the leaderboard. Is this just players being lazy, like users being lazy? Is there strategy that when it does hit, it's much more profitable than it was just a single lineup? Is it ever a positive EV move to do this? To me, it seems counterintuitive. Okay, I get this question a lot. It's like, oh, the person that won, the GPP has, you know, used the same lineup multiple times. Or they'll see, who knows, right? In the Millie Maker or something, they look at Results DB and like some person put in the same lineup 150 times. And then if you watch the show, you'll see me go like, it's stupid. It's negative EV. It's less EV, the better way of putting it. It's less EV to duplicate your own lineup. If it's negative EV to duplicate someone else's lineup, it's negative EV to duplicate your own lineup as well. You're still competing against your own lineup. But let's get back to the concepts now, okay? Right? Because remember, technically the end questions are yes and no questions, and they would be incorrect. Right, because remember, anything with a yes or a no is probably a bad question. Let me ask a question to the YouTube chat, okay? If you had complete information on a slate, okay? If you had complete information, if you knew everything, if you knew exactly what was going to happen on, let's say, last night's NBA slate or something, or today's NBA slate, who knows? If you knew exactly, you had complete information, and you had the ability to enter 150 lineups into the large field, whatever contest, you know, DraftKings or FanDuel, whatever they're running, and you had complete information, how many different lineups would you play out of your 150 lineups? You're going to enter 150 lineups. Would you play 150 different lineups? What would you do if you had complete information? Which obviously we don't. You don't have a time machine. You don't know what the players are going to do. That would make the information complete. If that's the case, what would you do? Would you play a different... Would you play one lineup that, like, you knew right here? Matthew Gajewski says, I'd run the train. Right. Because obviously, if you knew exactly what the players did and were going to do, you could play literally the best possible lineup. The lineup that can't be beat. Right, whatever the combination salary-wise that fits in, this lineup scores 458 points, and there's no way of beating it. Now the second best lineup is 456 points. Right, a lot of these lineups, the top 50 lineups that could possibly be could possibly be optimal, like aren't even played in GPPs. Like most of the time, you don't even need the best possible ever. Complete information lineup you need. But since you have that information, you could have the first best one, the second best one, the third best one, the fourth best one, the fifth best. Why wouldn't you do that? Well, is there a reason why you would need to do that? So let's take a look at a payout structure. I have, my notebook up over here. Let's get rid of the this a normal payout structure. Get rid of the flatter one because we barely see flatter ones. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Like these are the top 10 finishing places. Obviously, large field or whatever, there'll be plenty more, right? 900, 800, whatever below it. So if you played 10 lineups, right? And you had complete information. Is there any reason for you to play any other lineup? You're guaranteed first place no matter what. So if you play 10 lineups and you play one lineup there, you're going to get $100,000, right? If you play the same lineup in all these spots, you're just going to split all these spots. So you're going to capture all this money in the top 10. If you have 10 lineups and you played the optimal with the complete information, you'd capture all of them. Now, if you played the second best lineup, the third best lineup, the fourth best lineup, the fifth best lineup, the sixth best lineup, the seventh best lineup, the eighth best lineup, the ninth best lineup, the tenth best lineup, you know what happens? You end up getting the same exact thing, right? Because you're going to capture all the spots anyway. Now, if someone else also has that lineup, obviously be splitting in those spots. So there's no incentive to be any different. If you knew this lineup cannot be beat, you'd play it as many times as you could. If you knew that lineup can't possibly be beat. But that's the only way to know that is with complete information. But even when you put in the lineup multiple times, the expected value of a lineup will always go down with more lineups that you put in. Your portfolio as a whole, every time, this is the concept. This is what you, if you go to theoryofdfs.com, go get the fundamentals masterclass. This is why arguing with people that that don't understand that, oh, well, with 150 lineups, you can't lose. You know, those types of people. Every additional lineup you play has less equity than the first lineup that you played. I'm not talking about from their projection or anything like that. It's just simple math. Okay. Let's say this is the payout structure of the contest, right? First, this, the 10th. And you played one lineup for $5. We'll call the entry fee $5 or whatever. Okay. So you're spending $5, right? $5 to win 100,000. Okay. You're spending five, like, what's the most you could win with this lineup? You have one lineup, $100,000. Comes in fifth place, you get what? 5,000, whatever. But the highest you could possibly win is $100,000 with one lineup. Now let's say you have two lineups. Okay. So your second is, if you play two different lineups, right? What's the most that the second lineup you play could possibly win if your first place, if your first lineup wins? Well, that's only $40,000, right? Even if you play the same lineup twice, right? What's, if you played the same lineup twice, what's the most amount that each lineup could possibly win? $70,000, right? Because you'd split first and second. You're paying the same price regardless. You're doubling, right? $5, $10. Let's say you spend for three lineups, $15. You're spending an additional $5 to win the most you could possibly win with that lineup is now $20,000. Because you're competing against your first lineup and your second lineup. But you're paying the same amount. You're not paying any less for it. So let's say you play four lineups. Your fourth lineup, max winnings is $10,000. The expected value of each lineup as you add more goes down and down. So now you add the sixth lineup. Now you're spending $25. $5, you're spending $5 more to gain only an additional max equity of $5,000, right? The difference between $10,000 and $5,000. You're spending now when you go down even now six lineups. You're spending the same, you're spending $5 like anyone else to gain an additional what? An additional $3,500 worth of equity. 35 right down here, 30, 40, 45, 50. You see that these are just 10 lineups. Once you get to the 150th place, 150th place in this contest may only pay what? $100 maybe? Maybe, if that, $75, maybe. But you're still paying another $5 for that entry. You're not getting a discount on the entry. Still paying another $5 on the entry. So your 150th lineup, you're spending $5 to gain at maximum $75 worth of equity. At maximum, right? That's if all your lineups come in first and 50th, which isn't going to happen. Right? Unless you have a time machine. But even if you did have a time machine, let's say you did have a time machine, your 150th lineup, even if you duplicated yourself 150 times with the nut lineup that you knew was the nuts and no one else would have, you'd get first to 150th place. But if you put in only 149 times, and let's say 150th place was $75 and the entry fee was $5. That 150th lineup, you're spending $5 to make $75. You know it because you have 149 other lineups that are going to be above it anyway. So how much value are you getting? Now it's plus EV. Sure, yeah, okay. Because you know what happened in the contest. You know, I mean, you have the time machine, right? You have the complete information. So even if you're putting in 150 lineups, you're always competing against your own lineups also. My one lineup that I have against you, my max is $100,000. My second lineup, same thing. My max is $40,000. My third, my max is $20,000. Okay? The more and more lineups that you put in, the less and less expected value your overall portfolio gets. because each lineup can't each have a shot. They each have a shot at winning 100,000, but when one wins 100,000, the other 149 can't. The other 149 are only competing for $40,000. Okay? This is the equity dynamics of the contest, of a progressive payout structure contest. So, if that's the case, and you do not have complete information, right? I'm using the case that you're a time traveler, right? And if you're a time traveler playing a 150 lineup train in a 150 max contest, that would make sense, right? You know exactly what's first place, right? But is there a reason to play 150 of the same lineup any other time? I'll let the YouTube chat see if they can figure that out, because there is another time that you should do that all. It would be plus EV to do so. Will it be the most EV? Remember, we're not talking about plus EV, negative EV. These aren't like black and white things of like something is plus EV and there's no measure of that. It's more or less. Is it above the line of positive expected value or negative? It's not like a magnetic charge, right? Something if let's say on this $5 entry, your expected value was $5.01. On another $5 entry, your expected value was $67 million. Okay? I'm always using exaggeration to prove the point, whatever that is. Both of these lineups are plus EV, right? One is positive by a cent. You should be profitable on average a cent. This year should be profitable on average $67 million. Which one would you rather play? Which one would you rather have? I'd rather have the $67 million. But it doesn't mean you can't be profitable with the first one, right? So it's not like plus EV, negative EV. It's like what's more profitable long-term and less profitable long-term. It's quite possible to be profitable long-term, but not be the most profitable long-term. There are a lot of things that top DFS players do that is plus EV, but not like they're not maximizing their EV. They're still profitable. They're still making money. But Daniel Hutchings says in the chat, more subtly, if you're a plus EV player, each entry you make is slightly less EV because you have more and more competition with yourself. Yes. But I was asking, where would be the time where you wouldn't mind, it would be plus EV to play a lineup trend, like in a 20 max contest, say I'm going to play 20 of the same lineup. Or in a 150 max contest, I'm going to play 150 of the same lineup. When would it be worth it to do so? Will it be the most worth it to do? Would it be better to build lineups that, you know, that are different? Yeah, it would. But there are times where playing 150 of the same lineup is profitable. Should be profitable. Matthew Gajewski says it. You know you have a large enough edge on the field and chose not to take the time to build more than one lineup. Well, yeah, the first part is worth more than the second part. The second part is more of an excuse. If the field is bad enough, okay, if the field is bad enough where you get outsized equity on your edge, even if you don't come in first place or anything like that, that it's still profitable. So like in the middle, like if I would fathom that you could play your cash, your median optimal lineup in the NFL Millie Maker contest 150 times and be profitable on the season. On that long term and not on the season. Right, you only get 17 weeks or whatever. The NFL Millie Maker is the softest contest in DFS. You'll get so many lineups that are very poorly projected. That's what you're looking for, very poorly projected lineups. The more and more very poorly projected lineups there are in a contest, feel free. They're seeding you min cash equity. And if you get 1.5x or 2x your money, go for it. Do it 150. What? Now there's no reason not to do it 150 times. Because then we get down to double ups. Like when we're talking about double ups, you wouldn't play the same lineup multiple times. Right? There's no incentive to do so. Oh, why am I going to play? Why am I going to play different lineups into a contest where coming in 100 man 50-50, coming in 50th and coming in first is the same? I don't need to capture any different type of equity. It's like, if I have the option to play five lineups into that contest, I'm going to play the lineup that I think should place in the top half and play five at the same time. The effects of the extra equity, right? Let's do this for double ups, right? I mean, let's just say you're in a double up and a 20 man double up or whatever, 50-50, right? Right. Let's say it's a $5 double up, right? All these spots get $10, right? Like all these spots get 10. Let's say you're in a 10-man double or whatever it is, right? All these spots are $10. So any extra lineup that you put in, you're spending an extra $5 to get $10 of equity, right? Now you put in your second lineup, which can't come in first place. It can only come in second place, but first place is only $10. Second place is also $10. Third place is also $10. So every time you add an extra entry, you're getting the equivalent amount of equity. So because you're getting the equivalent amount of equity, does it matter that you play the same lineup at the same time? No, it doesn't matter. If you come in 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th. Okay. Come in 41st, 42nd, 43rd, 44th. It doesn't matter. They all pay the same amount anyway. One lineup really is not competing against the other lineup for any extra equity. In GPP, they are, because it's progressively paid out. It's not just one. Like, every $5 you spend on this contest gets you less and less possible equity in the contest. Which is why playing 150 lineups in large field GPPs is way harder, way more skillful than playing one. Why is that? Conceptually, figure it out. Why would playing 150 lineups be much more difficult to be profitable than playing one? Even in large, we're talking about large field GPPs, right? 50,000 people playing, right? 50,000 lineups. You go on Twitter, you go on Reddit, you see people post garbage, you know, garbage advice like, oh, if you're gonna play the large field GPPs, this is what you hear. If you can't max it out, don't play it. You're not on an even playing field, right? You're competing against people that are playing 150 lineups and you only have one lineup. Go play a contest where they're only playing one lineup. Like that. That's such horrible advice. It makes no mathematical sense. It is actually easier. It is as easier to be profitable playing less lineups if you just compare it on a user-by-user basis. But why is that? I'm explaining why it is right now. Why is it so much more difficult? It gets more, the more and more lineups you play, the harder and harder it is to be profitable. Even though you see the idiots online that say, I can play 150 lineups, I'd win all the time also, right? It's what we're talking about right here. It's on the sheet in front of you. Every extra dollar you spend is worth less and less to you in equity. You have to make that up, right? You have to have enough edge, right, that your 127th lineup is worth more than most of the field's lineups. Because your 127th additional entry, let's say it's a $15 contest, right? We could the DraftKings contest today, we could even go there. Let's take a look at like the basketball, the NBA contest today. So let's take a look. Let's go to contest. Where are we going? Lobby. We'll take a look. What's the payout structure? UFC, NBA. I rarely ever go on the DraftKings site. Okay. So you got NBA here, right? 27,400 entries. Let's take a look. Look at this payout structure. Okay. If you played 150 lineups and you came in first through 150th. Your 131st through 150th lineup is only going to get paid $70. Okay? It's only going to get paid $70. This is a $15 contest. Okay? That's not even 5X, right? That's 4 point whatever X. 4 2/3 X. So once you enter your 131st lineup, the maximum that that lineup could make is not even 5X. Once you enter your 51st lineup, the max that that can make is $150. Okay? So these lineups have to be so much significantly better, have a better chance at first place than so many of the other lineups in the contest. The fact that you're paying the same $15 to get less and less equity into the contest. When you're only playing one lineup, you're paying $15 and my shot is at $100,000. If I play two, my shot is at $130,000. I have spots in these equity zones. And I'm paying only $30 for it, right? If you pay $60, you get now equity spots into, you know, the top four. But you still, people that are paying more and more entries, they're $15 entries and taking them as far. Which means your top lineups, if you're going to build 150 lineups, you have to build significantly higher EV lineups in your 150 lineup portfolio. Yet if I'm playing one lineup into this contest, I could build a lineup, theoretically, a 150 max player, right? A good 150 max player could play 150 lineups. I could build one lineup that is not better, not has a lower EV than half of their lineups, and I would be more profitable. I'm building a lineup that is as plus EV as their 76th lineup. And just from the way that the equity in contests are, that they're so top heavy and so progressive, that the 76th place line, I mean, the 76th place lineup is what? $150. Okay? But my lineup, their 76th lineup only has $150 extra equity. And my lineup has a shot at first place. Because I'm not competing against any other my other lineups. I'm paying $15 for purely, I get the maximum amount of value from my entry fee. Now, if it was that every extra entry costs you less money, then we could start talking about, oh, yeah, it's worth it now to play a lot more lineups, right? If I know that my 150 lineup could only net me $70, but it only cost me $2 for that additional lineup, then yeah, sure, maybe it's worth it then. But not when every lineup is $15. So that's why you've seen me in the past. Like, most slates, when I play large field GPPs, I can play 5 lineups. I have no problem. That's what I used to do before I had a bankroll, back in 2016, 2017. I have no problem. I'm 8 lineups into these contests. Then you start bumping it up. Once you start learning how to play and building plus EV lineups more and more and seeing how much edge you have, then you're like, okay, I'll build 15 lineups, 20 lineups. Then you start learning how to use tools like Lineup HQ, like optimizers and stuff. It's like, okay, now I can recreate this and build 40 lineups, 60 lineups. But I rarely play 150. It's hard. It's hard to play 150 because of this dynamic. The more and more lineups that you put in, the less and less equity you get on the dollar for your entry fee. Which means your lineups have to be even better and better than the field on average. Daniel Hutchins says, well, you could imagine a contest where lineup L should be owned multiple times at equilibrium, and you would expect it to be under-owned. in a contest tight with many entrants and few possible lineups. Yeah, he's talking about like when it would be beneficial to duplicate your lineup multiple times, right? If it's something so under-owned, under equilibrium, you'd play it multiple times because of that. ANS Comedy says, I feel like you need to have immense risk tolerance to run a 20 lineup train. It couldn't be me. Well, I mean, if you're playing within, you know, the scope of your bankroll. The whole thing of running a 20 lineup train is that the field is so bad that you're kind of playing it like it's a double up, right? I've done that before. Especially when you run out of time. That's why Matt Gajewski's like, oh yeah, you planned on playing 20 entries and then, you ran out of time and you ran like a 2-10 lineup trains because you're out of time. And it could still be plus EV. It's not maximizing your EV, but it could still be, depending on how bad the field is. Dan Hudgen makes a nitpicky point. There's only one strategic benefit to playing 150. That is, you know, a tiny amount of the ownership in the contest, namely your own. Seems a very small effect, though. Right? Depending on, obviously, if you're playing 150 lineups, you're playing in a contest with 27,000 entries. I mean, how many that you're, it's not that large of a percent of the contest. But ANS Comedy says more succinctly. More lineups, the more cost, higher risk. You got to finish higher to break even. That's correct. That's essentially what I'm saying here. So getting back to the question, is there a reason that many players use a lineup train in 20 max contest? Obviously, I'm using this episode to show the equity dynamics of payout structures, right? What EV of lineups are. Like, go back to the core basics of playing DFS, of what the DFS contests look like as a game. So you could think to yourself, you go, oh, okay, I see a person doing X, Y, and Z. Well, what would the benefit of doing that? What would be the downside? What would be the upside? What would be the downside? Are there specific instances where that could be beneficial? Are there instances where it's horrible to do? And could it be plus EV, but just not great EV, right? Like in the NFL Millie Maker, I think, especially at the beginning, but probably towards the end of the season also, if you played the Blitz Optimal or something, or the RG Optimal, and you just said, I'm going to play it 150 times in the Millie Maker, I think you'd be profitable. There's so many bad lineups in that contest. Yet, what's your shot at first place? Not much. I mean, you're seeding so much equity in the top spots that, like, is it worth even doing? There are better things to do than that, but I still think it would be profitable. So that doesn't make it wrong, right? When someone chooses a less EV option that is still profitable, That's on them. And 150 lineups, like people would ask me when I played a bunch of lineups that some of my lineups were too chalky, right? Because I'm typically a contrarian player, right? So like you go back in the day and I'm playing, 75 lineups in NBA. That's right. I'm not playing NBA anymore. And they'd study my lineups and they'd find like three or four lineups that are like, well, this is kind of like a cash lineup with a 2v2. Like this is not as much leverage as what you say. I said, yeah, because I built 75 lineups knowing that, hey, some of them are loss leaders, right? Sometimes you build 150 lineups to get 140 good lineups, knowing that 10 of the lineups may not be exactly what you want, right? That's the cost of doing business, depending on how you're building. Like if you're doing in very blunt methodologies, using optimizers, using lineup HQ tools and stuff like that, weeding stuff out, there are tons of times where I'm developing a portfolio of lineups where, like, in a reasonable amount of time, I'm getting to the point where, yeah, this lineup at the bottom may be maybe too contrarian, but I got 2 minutes left. I got to upload something, right? I got to the point where I'm happy with 98% of my portfolio. So I'm just going to upload it, right? And I'm good. And if I have a lineup or two that is probably negative EV, but probably not absurdly negative EV, like I can live with that. That's the cost of doing business. You see that a lot in top players' portfolios sometimes. You see, like certain days, it seems like some top players like didn't have the time and just ran like the top 150 optimal lineups. Some days you'll see that. Right, you'll see McLovin do that every so often. You go, oh, they literally ran. It's like the top lineup is like just one of the top 150 optimals, and that's it. Nothing else. And you go, and then someone will email and go, oh, look at what did they figure out? So they didn't figure out anything. Their lineup portfolio is not very good. The contest may be so bad that maybe they can make money doing that, a little bit amount of money. But I just figure that on that given day, they're playing like 17 sites and 400 slates at the same time that they just like up. They ran out of time and just like might as well put in 150 optimals then. 150 different optimals. It wasn't like the lineup train, but like the top opta, you know, the top median optimal, then the second one, then the third one. And they just did that just to have something in there that's not a dummy lineup. Because you'll see that. You'll see sometimes players. You know, you'll see in baseball coming up that you go, oh, this person like played like they locked in five. They locked in a stack and a pitcher and then they ran everything else. Is that a good thing to do? It could be. And then on the next day, you don't see that from them. It's like, well, what could have happened? It's like maybe they ran out of time or they saw that based on what their simulations or whatever, that this stack in this pitcher was so overwhelmingly plus EV that they just like, nope, I'm going to take all the risk in the world today and just lock six people or something like that. They think that way. Is it the most plus? Is it the highest EV thing to do? No, but your goal isn't to play the highest EV thing. Just be profitable. And depending on your risk tolerance, that's how much the more profit you want to get, the more risk you have to take. And some people don't like high-risk situations. Or sometimes you develop a portfolio that has different bands of risk. Some really contrarian lineups, some really chalky lineups to balance out the risk of your portfolio. Daniel Hutchings says, in progressive payout structures, you do not want to be correlated with other lineups. What's worse than having a 100% chance of correlating with 149 other lineups? That's what your train gets you. That's correct. It's poor from an equity standpoint, but if the field is bad enough, it can eke out a profit just by like min cashing. Would I do that? No, but I could see someone having that reason to do so. Most of the time, I'm 99% of the time in payout structure contests. You should not be duplicating with you. You shouldn't be duplicating with anyone, let alone yourself. You're paying an extra $15, $5, $100, whatever the entry fee, for less and less equity every additional lineup. So if you're going to play the same lineup, why are you paying the same price for less money? Especially if you're playing the same lineup. If you had perfect information, right? Perfect information, like just play one lineup and come in first place. That would be the highest EV. Right, in technicality, right, with perfect information, that example we had before, and it was 150 max contest. The highest EV thing you could do is play one lineup with that perfect lineup. Playing the same lineup twice is actually less EV. It gives you more raw money though, right? It gives you because you'll win 100, you'll win 100,000 for first and 30,000 for second. But from an EV perspective, $15, right? When you spend $15, you win $100,000. When you spend $30, you win $130,000, right? So it's each lineup, EV actually goes down. But of course, in this scenario, when you have perfect information, probably we shouldn't call it expected value anymore because your expectation is that you're going to win whatever spot that you put the lineup in because you have a time machine. So I hope this answers the question, Jeremy, who answered it, or other people. So I see it on Twitter, even. Especially when the lineup train wins, right, at GPP. Someone that, like, duped themselves 10 times. And especially when you come in 11th place, right? When it's like, oh, I beat out every lineup. I should have came in second, but this guy put it in 10 different times. You go, is that a good thing to do? It's like, no. It's most of the people that would be doing that are not good players, okay? So in general, as a heuristic, unless there are these very specific instances, that would still be less profitable than you playing different lineups, but maybe could be profitable. Play different lineups, even if you have to change one person, right? That's sometimes the more frustrating thing. Not frustrating, it's not me doing it, just looking at someone else doing it. Where someone like plays like 50 of the same lineup, and I'm like, especially in NFL, it's like, change the defense. Like, do something, right? Do something different. Like, okay, every lineup has the $3,700 defense. Okay, how about the $3,600 defense? How about the $3,500? Just change the defense then. But typically the type of users that are doing this are not people that understand why they should be doing, you know, changing the defense. They just like, oh, I'm going to play the same lineup in a whole bunch of times because, I don't know, they think they're going to win more money because of it. Okay, hit that thumbs up button on your way out the door. So give me those thummy thumbs. We're talking about lineup trains. Lineup, that'll be the title. Lineup trains. So whenever anyone DMs me, I could send them to this video, I guess. I think I did a decent explanation, right? Decent enough. I think so, right? I think it could have been better. But I talk more about it, right? Stuff like equity, progressive payout structures, you know. Basically, what is the game objective of DFS? In the Theory of Daily Fantasy Sports, 15-hour audio masterclass. You can pick up at theoryofdfs.com, as well as the Advanced Players Course, which comes with custom Excel tools. So go check those out, theoryofdfs.com. Hit that like button. I'm constantly smash the like button. Right, I got it. Devin's here. I got to keep on going. Smash the like button. I think I'm the host that asked to smash the like button more than anything else. So I think I'm good. Right? I think, do we have enough likes? If we don't have enough likes, I don't know. Maybe the show goes away. Maybe it does. Right? Does it go away? Does it matter? I had one person emailed me or something like that, and they DM me, and their only question was why. Why am I not more popular? Like, as a compliment, as more like I've been watching your show. I just found your show like a week or two ago. I've been watching all your stuff, and I just don't understand why only a couple of hundred people or got like 1,000 or whatever. Like, watch. Why isn't your show more popular? Like you're the only one talking about like almost all of this type of stuff. And I go, you know where my response is? I'm like, probably a good thing for us. It isn't as popular, right? There wouldn't be an edge. There wouldn't be an edge if this was too popular, right? Right. That's the difference, right? With people, oh, you're giving away everything. It's like, you know how many people play DFS? You know how many people? You know how many people will hear this type of information and then go, "Eh, I don't need that. I just need to know how Walker Kessler is going to do tonight or Olynyk is going to do tonight." Right? What all this fancy math stuff? Get out of here. Get out of here. Just tell me how the Knicks are going to do tonight, right? That's like 95% of people. So let them. What does it matter? The 5% of us that actually know what the hell we're doing, we'll make the money off of them. That's fine. I'm fine with that. I'm absolutely fine with that. And I like teaching you, right? And a lot of people, and then 95% of people that watch this can't even implement it. So they don't even do it right. Right? There's only like, right? I look in the chat and I go, okay, it's basically, some of the people in the chat are decent and that's about it, right? Right. How did I get to the point now that at the end of the show that I'm pretty much insulting most of the audience? I don't know. But if anyone was going to get there, it was going to be me. It was going to be me. Okay. So hit that like button. Hit the subscribe button. Obviously, if you want Lineup HQ, you want all the MLB stuff, coming up. NBA, get the combo premium package. I don't know why people do sport-based packages on Roto-Grinders. It's like one price, you get everything. So click on that link in the description, get $10 off a combo premium package. You get MMA, soccer, XFL, whatever, and any sport. You can just go there and just like, okay, you got everything. Like, it doesn't cost that much more than a single sport. And you'll get NBA and MLB at the same time, right? You get PGA, you get everything. So I don't know why you don't do it. You get the projections and ownership. You get, if you got the theory of DFS for advanced players with the custom Excel tools and a Roto-Grinders subscription, like that, what else do you need? There's nothing else that you need. Right? You could literally do exactly what I do. Like there's nothing else that you need, pretty much, right? Right, pretty much. I don't know. You pretty much don't need anything else. And you could be profitable. So I don't know why people don't do it. I'm glad. We should be glad that not enough people do it. But you should. You should do it. Okay, I'll be back tomorrow. Submit your questions, right? Just like Jeremy Robbins did. So if you have any questions about DFS strategy, I'll be here answering them. Right? Submit them. Questions@theoryofdfs.com. You'll see me here Monday through Friday. 11 o'clock Eastern on the DFS pregame show. On Rotogrinders.com.